You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time to talk politics with Labour leader Andrew Little.
Yes, indeed. Now I have Labour leader Andrew Little on the phone. How are you going, Andrew?
I'm very well, thanks. Yeah, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Haven't spoken to you in a little while, but I'm back on the Thursday Wire today, so time to have a catch-up. So it's come out this morning that Privacy Commissioner John Edwards is against the government's plan to get community groups to hand over clients' private details if they want state funding. Is Labour with Edwards on this?
Yes, we are. We have from the outset. We've said there is no need for personal information to be provided to the government for people who are using the services of NGOs. It is possible to collect the relevant data for the government to measure the impact of what they're doing without having to give personal details. And so I think he is right, and we are supportive of the recommendations that he's making.
And so if the government's plan still goes ahead, what do you see as some of the potential negative impacts?
Well, he's outlined them. One is that, people stop using the services provided by NGOs because they just don't trust that their information won't be passed on, or that they start using different names and different details. They just don't provide accurate information. And that then has the potential to put the NGO, the service provider, at risk in terms of future viability, which then will undermine any ability to deal with whatever social issue that those NGOs are dealing with. It goes back to this government. This government's made a big deal about social investment, which was all about gathering maximum amount of data, pinpointing kind of where the best way to spend money is. But there's a human factor that goes with it too, and actually a lot of people don't want their personal information to be disclosed to central government. They're happy to deal with NGOs, and that's good. You want community-based organisations to be supporting people and families and communities, that people feel more comfortable with that. But you can measure the impact of what is happening without having to, or those NGOs having to share personal information about those people. And the government's just going to have to get over this. They can achieve what they want without breaching those people's privacy rights.
In light of the recent data breaches, so there's been a couple over the past month and one earlier in the week, Anne Tolley says she's asked officials to develop and test a totally new IT system, and that if she can't guarantee that people's privacy is protected, then they'll have to put things on hold and do it differently. So it seems that she's taking privacy quite seriously with this statement. Is this not good enough?
No, it's not. And in fact, the system they did set up, they had to suspend the use of last night because 10 NGOs had put information up, and it turned out that the personal information of various users of those NGO services was available, was accessible to other people. So she's now put a hold on using the system that they've got, the portal that they've got. But it does highlight the whole problem is that, there is no guarantee about the security of that. And in any event, if you stand back and say, what does the government want to do? They want to measure the impact of the money they're spending in particular areas and with particular NGOs. Well, they can do that without having to know the names and personal details of the people who are being helped. Some people are very fearful about sharing their information with the government when they use the services and the support of an NGO, and they shouldn't need to be put through through that, and we do need NGOs to be effective in there, and the government, in my view, is just going to have to accept that if they're going to get the best impact, they're going to have to allow NGOs to deal with people and be funded to deal with those people without the government collecting their personal information. It is not a necessary thing for the government to have access to that personal information.
Right, so you're supportive of these NGOs being or giving the government information, but perhaps not personal, private information. It's kind of maybe taking names and kind of identifying information out of the equation. Is that kind of something that you see is working better?
I mean, there's two things, yeah. Either you actually trust the NGOs to provide anonymised information. So we've got X number of people using our services for these categories of sort of work or support, and provided that sort of way. Or, I mean, the Privacy Commissioner, John Edwards, suggests that the NGOs provide the information to Statistics New Zealand, who then does analysis and then provides that analysis to the Ministry of Social Development. The problem with providing personal information to government departments is that there's now all sorts of information sharing powers and obligations in some cases between different government departments. And there will be government departments who people do not want to share their personal information with when they are utilising the services of an NGO for, you know, something unrelated to any other government department. And you know, that's a reasonable fear to have and a thing to want to prevent from happening, and the government is being unreasonable insisting on the disclosure of personal information.
Mm. So next, let's talk about the typhoid outbreak that's just happened in Auckland. So the Health Minister, Jonathan Coleman, wasn't told about this until 10 days after three people were admitted to hospital. He's criticised the Auckland Public Health Unit for it, saying that they need to improve their communication and that they've been taken to task for it as a result. What do you make of Minister Coleman's response?
You know, at one level I can say, gee, if he found out that late, you know, after three people were involved, then yeah, there is something seriously wrong. But let's remember that it's his government and him as minister that has steadily underfunded the health system and DHBs and therefore the public health department in Auckland. And I mean, I don't know the full reasons behind why it has taken so long for the information to be made public and people to be aware that there is this typhoid outbreak. But I don't think the minister should be just pointing the finger of blame and washing his hands of all responsibility. And I'm not trying to point the finger of blame back at him either. I'm just saying that he is the minister. He should be giving reassurance to the public of New Zealand about what is being done and what is being done to prevent the further spread of this typhoid disease outbreak. And then he should look to the reasons why perhaps there has been, you know, difficulties in the way that this public health unit has handled this particular outbreak.
So do you think a decrease in funding is the reason for this breakdown in communication?
Well, I can't say that definitively. What I do know is that there has been a decline in funding in real terms for the health system generally and for DHBs. Most DHBs are running deficits at the moment, and those who aren't are, you know, been busily cutting back various functions and services. I wouldn't be surprised if those funding pressures have made their way to the unit that is responsible for dealing with public health issues and outbreaks of diseases like this. I cannot say definitively, but no, let's hear from them, and let's hear from the minister who might actually want to step up and say, you know what, we understand the importance of good public health departments and our DHBs. Let's explore what happened here, what went wrong, and make sure it doesn't happen again. It comes down to a question of leadership on his part as a minister. Rather than pointing the finger of blame and absolving himself of responsibility, how about he show some leadership?
I mean, the Auckland Regional Public Health Service have actually admitted responsibility themselves and said that there were delays and communication problems at their end. They kind of haven't mentioned anything that the minister could have done instead. Is this kind of does this not suggest that Labor is using this as an opportunity just to kind of hit out at the government?
It is most unusual in this day and age in a country like ours, in a city like Auckland, that there is an outbreak of a disease like typhoid. We all thought we'd eliminated that. We know it's in some of the Pacific Islands, but we'd eliminated it here. So when there is an outbreak, I think we have a reasonable expectation that there will be a prompt response in terms of dealing with those people affected by it, but actually that the public will be notified of, you know, what is a contagious disease. And so we need our public health departments and our DHBs to be up to the job. We know, and Labor has been saying for a couple of 3 years now, that we know there have been funding cuts to our health system, $1.7 billion. Those funding cuts do start to bite at some point, and they then start to show up in things like this. So we are just saying, could the minister please take some responsibility? There may well have been factors way beyond his control, and I'm prepared to accept that. But what I would like the minister to start doing is, rather than pointing the finger of blame and trying to wash any responsibility off him at all, is provide some leadership and say, okay, this has happened, this is what we're going to do about it, and I can give an assurance that the measures we're taking will prevent this from happening again.
Just finally, let's briefly touch on the SAS raids. So the Prime Minister has ruled out the chance of launching an independent inquiry based on information he's received from the Chief of the Defence Force and video footage he's reviewed. He seems pretty confident in ruling out the possibility of an inquiry. Does Labor see this as being a satisfactory response?
No, it's not good enough. We have some serious allegations being made about an exercise, this Operation Burnham, And yes, we've had a response from the Chief of Defence Force, Lieutenant General Tim Keating, whose response confirmed some aspects of the allegations made by the authors, Nikki Hager and John Stevenson, but obviously his explanation conflicted in other respects. Just getting an assurance from the Prime Minister saying he's seen some of the video footage and he thinks it's okay is not good enough. There are genuine questions about what happened in this particular mission and whether there were unforeseen civilian casualties, and the reputation of our Defence Forces is now at stake. It cannot be for the Defence Force to sort of be required to provide the assurance. We need an independent inquiry to provide the assurance to the New Zealand public that our Defence Forces are above and beyond reproach.
Bill English is arguing, though, that the Defence Force Chief, Lieutenant General Tim Keating, is independent because he wasn't involved in the raids at all and also has full access to the video of the raid, the planning that went into it, and also the ISAF review that was completed afterwards. What's your take on this? Should the Prime Minister have had advice from others outside of the Defence Force in making his judgment, or do you think that, do you not see Lieutenant General Tim Keating as being independent?
It is simply not possible to describe Tim Keating as the Chief of Defence Force as independent in relation to an issue that concerns the very military forces that he is responsible for. That's not independent. He has a responsibility for those people and for what they do, and he cannot provide an independent assurance to the public of New Zealand about what happened in this mission and whether mistakes were made. That can only come from a genuinely independent inquiry, somebody who's independent of the military, and for that matter the government, the executive government. And I still maintain that from the information we know, and that has been put in the public arena over the last few weeks, there is still a strong case for an independent, a genuinely independent public inquiry to give New Zealanders the assurance about what happened, what the facts are in this particular case, and that the standards that our soldiers act to is of the highest standard.
Mm. But regardless of there being a strong case, what happens now then if the Prime Minister has ruled out the chance of an inquiry? Is it just hoping that he changes his mind by just continuing to apply pressure? Like, what's the next step?
Yeah, I mean, because it's only the government of the day can call such an inquiry. They've got the power and the means to do that. That's all there is. Now, I know that there's a lawyer representing the villagers or some of the villagers who were affected by this raid. Whether or not they initiate some sort of legal action, I don't know whether domestically or internationally, that may kind of push it along further. But I don't see the issue necessarily going away anytime soon. And that's why I think the Prime Minister ought to show some leadership on this particular issue. And I don't understand what the reluctance is to call for an independent inquiry. It's not as if Bill English, as the Prime Minister, is personally responsible, nor did anybody in that regard. I think New Zealanders, seeing that there is a real question about what happened in this particular mission, want a reassurance that if there were mistakes made, you know, what the impact of those mistakes were, and that they can be prevented in the future.
Mm, great. Well, thank you for your time this week, Andrew. We'll talk to you again next week.
Look forward to it. Thank you. Bye.
You've been listening to Andrew Little from the Labour Party. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.